The 100 Years' War, the Plague Truce, 1347 to 1354, Part 2. Now, last week I talked about where the plague had come from and the amount of time that it took to move from one place to the other. And, of course, if you've been following the coronavirus, you've seen a different way of spreading with airplanes and what have you. It's a little quicker, but you move out of the epicenter to the other areas and it spreads. So you saw how last week it spread pretty linearly across and then up through Europe. And then I talked about the different types. So I need to talk about some other material. Let's talk about where the names come from first. We generally refer to it just simply as the plague. We know it as the bubonic plague, and the term bubonic comes from the overwhelming of the lymph glands in a victim. It is such a tremendous infection, then it's not a virus, it's a bacillus, remember, that it quickly overwhelms the lymphatic system. And so that causes the lymph nodes, particularly in the armpits and the groin, to swell up in very large sizes, usually the size of an egg or a hen's egg or a duck egg. That will also happen on the side of the neck as well. And that's where the term bubonic comes from. It is sometimes referred to as the Red Death, such as in The Mask of the Red Death of Edgar Allan Poe. That is a reference to, as you get this fever, it begins rupturing the corpuscles in your vein system, and you get these red blotches all over your system. And that's the Red Death, if you will. And then you have the Black Death. Now, the Black Death is actually associated with the Red Death, because what happens is when you have the rupturing of the corpuscles, you're actually bleeding internally. And so that blood will then go down by gravity to the tips of your fingers, the tip of your nose, your lips, your feet, and what have you, and it will then gather there and become gangrenous, and so it will turn black. Now, if you end up with that, you'll have to remove those, all those blackened places will have to be removed. So there's where you get the different terms and the different names, but we just generally call it the plague. So that's those. Now, of course, you're all familiar with the famous little children's story. Ring around the rosy, pocket full of posy. Ashes, ashes, we all fall down. This is actually a plague game, if you will. Ring around the rosy is the red rupturing of the corpuscles. Pocket full of posy. Posy rings are lover's rings during the Middle Ages. Have flowers on one side and usually vous et autre, which means you and no other. Can be gold, can be in silver, can be in just regular metal. And pocket full of posies is a reference to when somebody died of the plague, if they whatever they were wearing, nobody is taking it off. But when the bodies are collected, if they are collected, frequently the people who are collecting the bodies are then taking those rings off and putting them in their pocket for sale later on. So ring around the rosy, pocket full of posy. Ashes, ashes. Now, very quickly, once the plague broke out, it was impossible to bury everybody. And so ultimately, they cremated them. There's some intermediate attempts, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. So the ring around the rosy and the ashes is the bodies are being burned. There is another version, and then it goes, achoo, achoo, we all fall down. And that would be the coughing and the sneezing associated with the pneumonic plague. And so you probably, it would go ring around the rosy, pocket full of posies, achoo, achoo, we all fall down. And so they're actually playing a game of what they're seeing around them. Now, the bubonic plague is very fatal. Mortality rate is very high, particularly at this time period. You just don't have a couple of people getting sick. You might see a couple of people, but in a week, then most of the population is either run off or laying on the street somewhere. So it's very quick, very overwhelming, and obviously freaks everybody out. But anyway, those are some of the names. Now let's talk about what do we do with the bodies. Well, if you've seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail, they have a scene where a two-wheel cart, standard Trumbull, is being dragged through the streets by a couple of gentlemen, and one of them is beating a drum or a gong, calling out, "Bring out your dead." Now, in some cases, they probably did make attempts to collect the dead bodies. By the time you get piles of dead bodies, that's really not going to happen. And of course, who would take the job? Well, the people who take the job are criminals condemned to death. So it keeps them alive. They get to make some money, but I'm sure the mortality rate is 100%. But ultimately, collecting the bodies for burial is a waste of time because the system is completely overwhelmed. You can have mass graves and just dump all the bodies in, but you still have huge amounts of bodies. The next thing was, if you were near a river, you could dump the bodies into the river. Now, we know that the Rhone River was used for this purpose because at Avignon, which this plague broke out during the time of the Avignon Papacy, the Pope blessed the river so that the bodies thrown into the river would receive a Christian burial. Now, the Rhone River is one of the largest rivers in France. At Avignon, it is probably a mile wide. Now, you have to be careful looking at it because there's an island that separates it. If you remove the island, it's a little bit wider than it normally would be. I would say it's wider than, if you live in the United States, it's wider than the Mississippi River at St. Louis, which is pretty wide. And it's certainly, if you're in London, it's probably three times the width of the Thames at the Tower Bridge. So it's pretty good size. So you have all sorts of people. In the Middle Ages, there are only two bridges that cross that thing. So the bodies in that area are being tossed into the river. We know from accounts that by the time they floated down to Marseille, on one occasion, there were so many bodies that it blocked the river, creating a, not a log jam, but a body jam, flooding the countryside. Ultimately, it was solved by having men from Marseille row up and with axes chop and prod those bodies so that they then flowed out into the Mediterranean Sea. Now you picture every town along the Rhone River where the bodies are floating by. And this could very well be, you know, any river. This may have happened on the Seine. We just have these really good accounts from the Rhone River. So this causes all sorts of problems. I mentioned before the last time, as the plague is spreading, the people who can get out leave. So that, for the most part, in most cases, is the municipal government, the upper class, the wealthy merchants, and so forth and so on. Now, in Italy, it's a little different because you have the city-state system, and a lot of those people stayed. They simply locked themselves into their homes and tried to, hopefully, ride it out. You have this taking place in Venice. Certainly, it takes place in Florence. And in Florence, you actually have the situation where the people tried to help one another, doing all sorts of different things. Taking people to the hospital, if you want to call it. The hospitals are death houses for all practical purposes. There's no way of saving them. Doctors died, nurses died, nuns died, priests died, poor died, rich died, everybody. It was pretty equal opportunity killer. We don't lose any popes because the Avignon Pope was so paranoid of getting the disease that he slept in a bed that was surrounded. I think he slept outside on one of the porches, but his area was surrounded by burning wood. They burned cedar wood all the way around him. Well, that's excellent because that will certainly keep the insects away. And if you had cedar in your house, that would also keep the insects away. So there's something, but we do not lose a pope and we don't lose any major kings. They are going out somewhere and locking themselves up. That's one of the things about Edgar Allan Poe's The Mask of the Red Death, because in the story, you have these wealthy people who have set themselves up out into a country villa, and they're living it up and having a good time, and ultimately somebody comes down dressed as a plague victim, and it is a plague victim, and then they're all going to come down with it. So it's kind of fatalistic, but you get the idea. Literally everything collapsed. Nothing works. If you're living in the rural area, you're probably better off because you're away from lots of other people, so the possibility of getting pneumonic plague goes down. And so where you have large cities is where you have the very large casualty rates. So there's all sorts of things that take place. And then, of course, as a result of the collapse of society, if you will, there are two extremes of groups that come out during this early plague. One of them is referred to as the Luciferian. These are people who believed that Satan was getting even for being cheated out of control of the world. And so that these, so you have devil worshippers, because obviously the priests are dying and prayers don't do any good anywhere else. If you go to Venice, most of the churches that are in Venice that aren't St. Mark's are churches that were built after plague outbreaks to thank God for stopping the plague. But the most famous one are the flagellants. These are people who believed that God was punishing man for their sins. So you would have people that would gather in groups. They would dress sometimes in sackcloth, sometimes in just regular clothing, and they would whip themselves, flagellate themselves, sometimes with a rope, sometimes with a chain, sometimes with a rope that had, or a whip that had metal ends so that it would cut you and you would bleed. This is, the hope was you get enough people together and they march around asking for forgiveness and God will change his mind. Now, what they basically do is end up spreading the plague to other places. You would normally go and from one church to the next church in a town, and once you reach that church, you would then have processions around it, do a service inside of it. People would then lay on the floor sometimes in the form of whatever their major sin was and try to do this penance. And it ends up being a disaster. So you can see what society can get and what can happen to it at this particular point. And there's all sorts of accounts. You have to be careful. Some of the accounts that I've been using, I use Johannes Knowles, The Black Death, A Chronicle of the Plague. And he has a general, there are some examples from the first period of outbreak that we're on, and then the second time it breaks out. You have Samuel Pepys, The Diary of the Plague Years in London. That's much later. So it does break out periodically. And when you go to the Middle East, Napoleon's expedition into Egypt, at certain times of the year, you had outbreaks of the plague. And he actually, when he's in Syria, is in a plague hospital visiting some of the soldiers that have come down with it and what have you. So it does take place at certain times. So it just, I think the simple explanation is nobody knew what to do. There were no cures. Some people said don't talk about politics, stay out of the do. People came up with really strange concoctions to charge you money. Some of the people believed that if you wore a rat around your, dead rat around your neck, that would be good luck. No, you're probably going to get the plague from that. Nothing works. And so you can usually count on the fact that when something doesn't have an immediate cure, people will get desperate. And again, here in the United States, I have seen a clip which shows a former, well, he's still Reverend Baker, of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker fame, who's a born-again Christian charlatan. And he was selling a silver liquid that would cure the coronavirus or keep it away from you. Yeah, I'm sure it works really well. I think it was $150 a bottle. But anyway, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You're going to see all kinds of stuff popping up. So that's the real disaster. Not only do we have people dying, but then the collapse of the fabric of society. So next time we're going to look at the outcomes as far as the military takes place. Now the sources for this, Frederick Cartwright's Disease and History, Chronicles of Jean Venet, the Black Death, Chronicle of the Plague by Johannes Knoll, The Black Death by Philip Ziegler, and we have our three friends who mention it. That is 100 Years of War by Perrois and 100 Years of War by Nylands. That's Volume 2, the second one. So I hope you enjoyed that. As always, don't forget to come by the website, sumahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.